Everybody, this morning, this is my fourth Super Sunday since I've been here, so it's a great day for all of us. Just a few housekeeping issues. When we get out of church or serve or whatever we call this, this is worship. Whenever we're done with worship, we've got coffee and donuts, if you're visiting with us, that are in the fellowship hall, but we have tables set up for our lunch today, so if you wouldn't mind, usually we go in there and congregate and hang out. We can't do that today because it's so crowded with tables. So this is the one day a year stuff's different. So when we get out of worship, if you head in there and you want coffee and donuts, that's great. Get it and come back in here. And so we can kind of make that as efficient as we can. We've got almost 400 people going in to get donuts and coffee between both worship areas. So that's number one. Number two, when we come back in here, we have a combined Bible class for about 30 minutes with those of us who are in here and the Spanish-speaking brothers and sisters across the way, because we've got to set up their room for all the food. And so we're gonna have that. So if you get your coffee, your donuts, you come back in here, and we have class. And then at 11 o'clock, like on the dot, we will dismiss, and we'll head in there for lunch. And when you go in there for lunch, you'll go in the middle, and you'll head right into where the food is on the right. And you'll get your food, and then you go out and get your drinks. Here's the only thing you need to remember. Don't go against traffic. So if you find yourself going against people, you're going the wrong way, all right? So if you go in and you get your food, and then you go out and you're getting your drinks, and you feel like you need to turn around, look for another exit. There's one. Just look for it. And so it'll probably be right here. So don't get antsy. Don't get in a hurry. It's all right. We've had a lot of people that helped today, a lot of people that brought food and ice and water and ladies that have been in there setting up and tearing stuff down. We've got a lot of people tearing stuff down. We've got people running Children's Church. Rachel Sawyer's been here two whole days this week trying to get that all set back up. And so if you see people working, if you know the effort that people have put in, just tell them thank you. And we are thrilled that you're here visiting with us, and we hope you'll stick around for class. And if you're visiting with us on the tables in there, don't take them now because it won't look good, but, you know, take them when we're done eating. There's some tin cans in there. They're different colors, and one of our ladies has had those brought in. So if you're visiting with us and you want to take one of those home, those are for you. And if you gave us a contribution check, you can take two. No, I'm kidding. Okay. I made that up. Unless you did, and then by all means, take two. But seriously, if you're a visitor with us, those are for you. We hope you'll take that home. If you see some others that are left and you want those, by all means, take those home. We are thrilled that you're here with us today. You see the word epilogue behind me. I am a fan of epilogues. Some of you are saying, what's an epilogue? An epilogue is when you get to the end of a book, or you're watching the end of a play, or you get to the end of a movie, and there's that, you know, if you get to the end of a book, and there's those last two pages, you know, it may say something like, you know, 19 years later, or 20 years later. If you're watching a play, there'll be one final scene. These epilogues, what they do is that they kind of sum up the whole story. They give us another way of seeing things, or they show us what needs to happen in the future. Sometimes there's good endings. Sometimes things don't work out well. I'm a huge fan of epilogues. In fact, if movies don't end well, I won't recommend them. If books have an epilogue, usually I'll recommend that. If you're still struggling as what an epilogue means, in the movie Remember the Titans, this movie is based upon the 1971 T.C. Williams team in Arlington, Virginia. I know a lot of you have seen this movie. It was about the struggles of a football team to integrate white and black. And during the course of the, if you hadn't watched the movie, you know, spoiler alert, you should have seen it. It's old now, so you should have done seen it. But during the movie, you know, they show all these scenes, and as the football team tries, they're on this journey for this undefeated season, and the soundtrack to the movie is fantastic. It's got all these oldies songs in it, and as the teams are playing, you hear all these, you know, old songs. Well, they're not old, but they're good songs coming in. One of them is "Na Na 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 Kiss 'Em Goodbye" by Steam, and so, you know, they're playing, and you hear that jingle, "Na Na Na Na," you know, and they're playing this game, and the movie ends, of course, and this team has learned to think of one another as brothers, and they've won the state championship. You ain't seen the movie, I'm sorry. But Wikipedia, it's a true story. So they won the state championship, and at the very end of the movie, the narrator starts to talk about what happened 10 years later. And in the story of white and black that learned somehow how to live together as brothers, they've all gathered 10 years later for this funeral of one of their former teammates who's died. And it's a moving scene. White and black come together for their fallen brother. And one of the last things you see in the movie is this teammate's former teammate who he rivaled with and who he argued with. And as they're sitting there at the casket, everything's quiet, and you hear him. Hey, 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 goodbye. It's a beautiful ending to a fantastic movie. That is an epilogue. And I love epilogues. Now, that movie is great by itself, but it wouldn't be near as good without that ending right there. The Bible has a lot of stories with epilogues. Jesus is a huge fan of epilogues. And just to save us some time, we're going to skip to one of the other ones I like. In Luke 15, Jesus tells a story about two brothers. And he says, the younger brother asked for his inheritance early. And the dad gave him the money, and the younger brother went out and he blew everything. And he blew it on stuff he shouldn't have blown it on. So if you gave your son his inheritance early and he went to Vegas, I'll just let you fill in the details about what he bought, okay? So he goes down there, and what happens? Boy run out of money. And he's sitting there in Vegas, and He's sitting there in Vegas, and he says, you know, what have I done? I've blown all my money. I got no friends. I don't have nothing. You know what I'm going to do? My daddy will take me back. If I go home and I tell my dad that I messed up, I know my dad will take me back. And so the younger boy goes home, and he's got his speech prepared, and he gets there, and the father runs out to see him. He throws his coat over him, puts his signet ring on him. He kisses him. He says, hey, get the fattened calf out to deep freeze. Let's put it on. I made the deep freeze up, but come on. Let's prepare it. My son is home. He was dead, and now he's alive. He's lost, and now he's found. It's a beautiful story. Yeah. Those of you who remember, y'all know the next word, but. It's strange. If you have your Bibles and you look at Luke 15:25, that's a powerful word. Meanwhile, epilogue. The older son is outside on the porch. And he has a real problem with his father forgiving his younger brother. After all that I've been here slaving for you. I've been here working for you. I never did anything wrong. I did everything as right. He comes home, and he's the one you done give him half the estate. Now you done give him mama's engagement ring too? Now you gave him your best suit? You know, what am I, a chopped liver? I've done everything I was supposed to do, and here you go showing kindness to people who don't deserve it. Jesus has this epilogue because here's the question. Who's the prodigal? Which son is the lost son? You know, the story of the prodigal son's a powerful story. But like, remember, the Titans wouldn't be near the story without the epilogue. Y'all see what I'm saying? And Jesus is not the only one who's a fan of epilogues. If you'll think about that as you read through even the Old Testament, what you'll find out is that there are a lot of stories with epilogues. The stories are good, but they're not near as good if you take out the epilogue. Last week, I know some of you are visiting with us, we discussed the story of Naaman. And it's a story most people know, whether you've been a Christian a very long time or not. It's a story about a man who had it all. He was valiant, had all the medals, 4-star general. He did everything he was supposed to do, but what? Had leprosy. That's right. I think Brother Don read our passage last week. But he had leprosy. And you remember the story, the little girl, you see the little girl in the background, she told him about this medicine man in Israel. Oh, I got a guy. If you go see him, you do what he tell you, he'll heal you. And so Naaman went, and he spoke with Elisha, and Elisha said, you gotta dip yourself 7 times in the Jordan River. Y'all ever been to the Tennessee River? I don't know about y'all, but, you know, it ain't no clear water. Somebody says, let's go dip yourself in there. Surely there's got to be a more sanitary way of doing this. And Naaman has a problem with that. You know, I could have, we could have phoned, you could have phoned that prescription in. Now, there's nothing worse than going back to the doctor to get a prescription. We could have just gone to Walgreens and got it. Don't that make anybody else mad besides me? Well, I got to go back to the doctor, pay another copay just to give you the same prescription I done got last time. That's what Naaman says. I could have got this at home. I drove all this way just for you to tell me to dunk myself in the river. And his servant says, hey, what have you got to lose? So Naaman, with only faith, dunks himself in the river seven times. And when he comes out, y'all know the story, right? Bible says he was skin was as clear as a newborn baby. And that's a great story. But it wouldn't be near as great without the epilogue. And here's why I want to do this today. Because in the church, a lot of times we stop at the climax. What we're supposed to do today, I'm supposed to extend an invitation for anybody who hasn't become a child of God. We want you to be baptized. We want you to be dipped and immersed in water. And most of the time, we leave it at that. But here's the issue. You have an epilogue, too. There's more to your story, too. Just being baptized is not the end of your story. And a lot of times, we stop that book before we ever read them last two pages. Today's about the last two pages. Because when Naaman comes back, he starts asking questions. It makes some of us read it a little strangely. And that's what I want to do with you today. I want to very quickly show you the three things that Naaman brings up. And what we find out is that Naaman is struggling with a lot of things we struggle with. So if you got your Bibles, we're just going to look at the text that Brooks read. 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 15 and 16. Naaman's been healed and he comes back. And he says, Naaman and all his attendants went back to the man of God, and he stood before him, and he says, now I know there is no God in all the world except in Israel. So please accept this check, this gift, but y'all with me by now, for your servant. And the prophet answered, he said, as surely as the Lord lives whom I serve, I can't accept such a thing. And even though Naaman urged him, he refused. Silly Naaman. You can't buy healing. You can't buy salvation. You can't purchase grace, right? We all know this. But I think a lot of us have not learned the concept of a gift. There are a lot of us in here who, when someone tries to give us something, we have an urge to pay them back, don't we? Why do we do that? Y'all can answer. It's okay. It's Super Sunday. We'll relax. Why do we try to do that? I don't want to owe them something. A friend of mine got me out of a jam about a month ago. I could have got myself out of it. What am I saying? I couldn't have. He got me out of a jam. And I got in a tight jam. I got in it real quick, and he just got me out of it. And the next week, I called his secretary. I asked what his favorite restaurant was. I got him a gift certificate for him and his wife. I was feeling good. It's like my smile. That's how I was feeling. I was feeling good. I mailed it to him in nice calligraphy handwriting. Thank you, sir, you know, for your generous, you know, whatever, and please accept this gift. I saw him at the beginning of last week. And he gave me an envelope. It was the same envelope I sent him. It had been opened. My gift certificate was inside. He said, I'm going to give this back to you. I said, no, it was a gift. He said, no. He said, I gave you a gift. When you return it, it's no longer a gift. That's a debt. I said, you don't want to take your wife out? He said, I do want to take my wife out. He said, but I also want to give you something and just give you something just because it's a nice thing to do. He said, Adam, and I'm the preacher here. He said, Adam, he said, that's what we call grace. What am I supposed to say to that? Well, okay, that's fine. I'm going to take my wife out with that gift certificate then, I guess. But don't he got a point, though? You know, how many of us are given something, and then we try to give it back? Look, I think a lot of us need to learn that being a child of God means we learn to receive. Here's what I don't mean. I don't mean you need to go home and rack up on your Chase card a bunch of stuff because the preacher said we got to learn to owe somebody. No, you missed that. We have to learn that sometimes you just receive and be grateful for what you have. Some of us need to learn what it feels like to be in debt to someone else because, you see, that's what God did for you. You can't pay God back. You can't cut him a check. He gives you a check. Hold up, let me get you what I owe you. You can't pay him back. You just owe him. And we need to learn what life is like to owe God. And I think one of the best ways to do that is stop trying to balance the scales every time somebody do something nice for you. But this ain't good enough for Naaman. Elisha don't want the check. So Naaman says, all right, if you won't take that, then let me, your servant, won't you give me as much dirt as a pair of mules can carry? Because your servant will never again make burnt offerings and sacrifices to any other god but the Lord. Church, Jehovah has said that sacrifices will not be made except in Israel. And sacrifices will not be made except by my priests. You know what Naaman wants to do? He wants to be his own priest. Naaman wants to make his own sacrifices. Naaman wants to control the narrative. Silly Naaman. We all look at that and we think, well, he just don't know any better. But how many of you are struggling with relinquishing control? Let me give you another story just so I can step on your toes a little more. A friend of mine who manages the church finances, not this church, but he manages this church finance, another church of Christ. He takes care of all their books, so accounts receivable, accounts payable, all the contributions, all the expenses, everything. We were talking on the phone, and he said, Adam, I can't make the money balance. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I mean, we get all the contributions, and then we're paying the preacher, and we're cutting a check for the mortgage. We got to cut a check for missions, and we got cutting a check for, you know, lights and water and all that stuff. He said, but we're still going in the red. I said, I don't understand, because I'm looking at your sheet here. I'm looking at your bulletin. I know how much y'all bring in. I know your preacher can't be paid that much. You know, I mean, he can't be. I'm just guessing, even if I put him on the high scale, I don't know. What are y'all spending money on? He said, oh, it's not the money we're spending. It's the money we're bringing in. I said, man, I'm lost, man. Look, I got the bulletin. I got three bulletins. They all showing me that y'all got the money. What are you doing, embezzling? He said, no. He said, but 30% of the checks we get on the memo line. But they've designated where the check's supposed to go. Missions. Children's services. New church library. I said, y'all putting in a church library? He said, no. He said, but they gave us $10,000 for one. He said, we got the money. I can't pay the preacher with it. I can't pay the lights with it. I got to put it in a library, but we got no library. I said, go give them their check back. I said, what? I said, go give them their check back. You know, you can't use it. And he said, well, what about the ones that go to missions? I said, give them that check back too. There are a lot of us who struggle with control issues. Part of being a child of God means when you give to the... Y'all didn't know this was going to be a contribution sermon, did you? I didn't know either until I talked to him this week. Thought it would be a good time as any to talk about this. Part of being a child of God means that when you give your money to the church, you are not giving your money to pay the preacher, although I thank you. You're not giving your money to pay for the lights. You're not giving your money to pay for missions. You're not giving your money to that. You're just giving your money. And you don't get a vote on where it goes. Well, what if the elders, though? What if Bob and Bill and Robert and Johnny and Ralph, well, what if they decide they're just going to blacktop the, put new asphalt every year? Then I guess we got new asphalt every year. But I don't think that's a good... I don't think that's a good use of our money. Of whose money? Do you see where the divide is? We have a hard time letting other people decide what they're going to do with my stuff. But being a child of God means once you relinquish it, it's gone. You give to God, and what God does is none of your concern. But I want to be the one to make the sacrifices. I want to take the dirt, I want to take it home, and I want to be in charge. Part of being a child of God is, and this is one of the worst things, not the worst, but one of the hardest things we have to learn, is that we have to learn to lose. You lose. You just lost. We don't like that feeling, do we? But we have to learn. How about this? We used to sing a song when I was a kid. My wife reminded me of this song last night. Freely, freely, you have received. Y'all remember the next line? Freely, freely give. Church, God did not earmark his son. Jesus didn't die and God said, it's just for these people. It's just for these people. It's just when God gave his son. For God so loved the world that he gave his son for all. And if God's not going to earmark his son, why am I trying to earmark all of my stuff? Silly Naaman, but silly us. Naaman's not done. He still doesn't quite understand. So he keeps talking. He says, all right, may the Lord forgive. May the Lord forgive. But I got this one thing. When my master enters the temple of Rimmon to bow down, and he's leaning on my arm, and I bow there also. When I bow down in the temple of Rimmon, may the Lord forgive your servant for this. Let me get this straight. You know what you're going to do is wrong. You're going to do it anyway. So let me get some forgiveness in advance. Silly Naaman. Yet how many of us know that what we're going to do is wrong and we do it anyway? Because we just know God's going to forgive us. Church, this ain't writing something in the memo of your check. This is acting like God gave you a blank one that you just cash for whatever you want. You see, Naaman's been healed, but Naaman's not quite saved. Naaman understands where the healing power comes from, but he doesn't quite see the epilogue. He doesn't understand that there are things that go along with being a child of God. And those things are learning to lose. Those things are learning to take our calling seriously. Those things are learning to be patient with God. And he doesn't quite get it. But maybe here's one last thing for us. Everything Naaman says is foolish. I mean, he's been healed. And, hey, let me cut you a check for that. No, we don't want to do that. All right, well, let me just write something in the memo line. No, we don't want to do that. Okay, well, how about you just go on and ask God for some forgiveness for the road? Y'all ever ask God for some forgiveness for the road? Let me get a little extra so I can fill up. That's not how grace works, church. But in response to all that, you know what I would have said to Naaman? Man, we got to dunk you again, man. That didn't take. You ever baptize somebody and you think, man, I got to do this again. You're not quite there. I have. Baptized somebody and I thought, they just don't get it, you know? But here's what's most surprising. When Naaman says all that to Elisha, Elisha doesn't say, oh, you can't go home yet. Look, let's have a Bible study. Let's sit down and go over this stuff. Did y'all catch what Elisha said? Go in peace. What? What is Elisha endorsing this? Is he endorsing to go home and bow down in some temple and getting some forgiveness for the road? Is that what Elisha's doing? No. Here's what Elisha knows. That there's more to this story of Naaman than he can tell him right now. That there's more than he can do right now. When Elisha says, go in peace, he isn't saying, I approve. What he's saying is, that's all for now. For those of you who already know everything I've said this morning, and I'm sure there's a lot of you who already do, those of you who have already become accustomed to the life of faith, let me give you this. Not everybody is as advanced as you are. Not everybody is as far along as you are. This morning, our epilogue is this. Our task as the Unit Church of Christ is to bring people to Christ, period. It is not necessary for us to get people to agree to everything before that. And it is not necessary for us to get everybody to agree to everything immediately after that. Discipleship is a process. And do you know who's responsible for that process? God. It ain't me. It's my job to reveal Christ to the world, but God is the one who's going to make it come to pass. Solving all the world's problems is not our job. Our job is only to bring people to faith. And that is it. If there's anybody here this morning who has not become a child of God, your story's not even got started yet. God calls you to the water. God calls you to the healing. God is the only one who can save you. Not me, not your friends, not you. It's just God. But more importantly, here's what I want us to think about. For those of us who have been saved, or those of us who are thinking about it and who choose to do so, I want you to think about what that life looks like when the credits stop rolling. I want you to start thinking about what that looks like when you go home, like Naaman did. I want us to start asking hard questions. Church, I don't know if you've ever realized this, we are the epilogue to God's story. God gave his son. He did not earmark him. He gave him freely to everybody in this room. And when he did that, he expects us to provide the end. What's the end look like for you? What's the end look like for your family? What does it look like when you go home? God gave grace to everyone for free. Let us start to ask if we are able to give it just as freely as we received it. Not only when we go home, but even now as we stand and sing.